next case for argument is Legeste Mulder against Consolidated Insurance.
Good morning, Your Honors. William Sergnani for the Appellant.
Please wait until your name is called.
Okay. Sorry.
We generally wait until your adversary gets a seat at the table.
I apologize.
Mr. Sergnani.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Illinois law says that in construction defect cases such as the one that we're presented with in this case, whether the duty to defend is triggered depends upon what the complaint has to say about damages. If the complaint explicitly and specifically mentions damage to the building alone, that is, the defects alone, then there's no duty to defend. If the complaint, however, is expressed in identifying damage to something other than the building, or, and this is an important point, the complaint leaves open the possibility that it includes damage to something other than the building itself, then the duty to defend is triggered. In this particular case, in this particular complaint, falls into that latter category. This complaint essentially says there were defective workmanship that led to water infiltration that led to damages. What it does not do is characterize the type of damages that it has.
I don't find a limiting principle at all in your position. Because I would have thought that the way Illinois courts have handled this is that they look at the complaint as a whole to see if the facts could lead to coverage. And if they could, then, of course, there's a duty to defend. But it seems to me that if Illinois would let you get away with it, it is a fact-pleading state, but all you'd have to do is say somebody did something wrong and it hurt us, and instantly there would be a duty to defend. And, you know, I've even noted in your brief, you know, you think just to say the word damages, because that word is broad enough to include all kinds of property loss, it seems to me there would never be a failure to find a duty to defend in these cases unless the pleader was really ill-informed.
I think that's generally true, Your Honor. I think Illinois law specifically says, leaves open the fact that ambiguities are, in fact, sided with the policyholder in situations like this, and it particularly says this. It says that if the complaint, well, let me just take a step
but
back.
Can I just say, sure. I don't see ambiguity and vague as synonyms. It seems to me ambiguity means, you know, it might be one thing, it might be another thing. You have to get more evidence to figure out which it is, whereas vague, you know, just damages is vague. It doesn't tell you, it doesn't point you in any direction.
Well, Illinois law says, in my view, Your Honor, you're correct. My view is that Illinois law says that where the situation is that a complaint, that you cannot from the four corners of the complaint determine whether or not there is coverage, or more specifically, whether you can preclude coverage, then the insurance company, or Consolidated in this case, is supposed to err on the safe side, and they are, in fact, to defend, which they're given multiple options on what to do in that circumstance.
But under your view, I don't see how insurance companies could ever price these policies, because simply to issue a policy means you're defending people on things that... So this complaint's a perfect example. You can scour this complaint, and I don't see a hint that somebody had so much as, you know, a box of potato chips, you know, that got hurt from the war.
I agree. Your Honor,
if the complaint doesn't even hint that any part of the building was damaged by the water, and if Illinois is a fact-pleading state, what's left? You're really treating Illinois as a notice pleading state, which it isn't. Of course, the federal courts aren't notice pleading courts anymore either.
That's
They're
much.
Plausibility pleading courts.
Okay.
None of us knows what that means, but that's a different problem. But Illinois still says it's a fact pleading state.
It does. It does. And, Your Honor, all I can tell you is that if you look at this complaint, every single allegation of a building defect, every single allegation is an allegation of breach, not an allegation regarding damages. And this particular complaint speaks not to what its damages are.
Right.
And in this
so
situation,
it sounds very much like the complaint has done nothing
it has.
That would bring it within the policy's coverage.
Well, Your Honor, except that...
Try to talk over a judge will get you nowhere.
Apologies.
It's a pretty important principle of insurance law that policies like this don't cover the cost of doing the job right. The moral hazard would be astounding. It's So it is this limitation, which the district court recognized, is terribly important. And one would think there would need to be some reason to think that the complaint was seeking the kind of damages that were within the policy, but you've pointed to nothing. In fact, you concede there's nothing in the complaint.
I concede that it points to, it does not define the damages at all. It does not tell, the reader of this complaint cannot know from it what type of damages this person's seeking. And Illinois' policy is that in situations where you have this scenario, that they want to err on the side of protecting the policyholder, and they give a remedy to these insurance companies. You're right, Your Honor. These are not policies intended to cover construction defects. They are not. Those are contract cases. But Illinois says that in situations where the complaint fails to clarify, to define specifically enough from the four corners as to that this is not a covered complaint, they want to give the insured some form of due process. So the insurance company's options are A, to file the declaratory.
What does due process have to do with it?
Due process, I meant in having a fair hearing, not in a constitutional sense, Your Honor. Just in a sense of.
It's not about fair hearings here either. This is a question of policy coverage. It's a contract dispute. The courts are affording people all the hearings they're entitled to.
A hearing that they consolidated was entitled.
It's a question of what the meaning of the policy is as applied to a complaint, which does not enumerate any element of damage to the structure as opposed to the subcontractor not doing the job right.
Agreed. So if the question is whether or not a complaint this ambiguous or this vague as to what it's claiming as damages, can that trigger duty to defend? My response is that Illinois law says yes. I mean, it may not be, and I believe that its policy in saying yes is that it wants to protect the policyholder and says to the insurance companies, if you are concerned about this and you think there isn't any coverage and you have additional information, file your declaratory judgment action or reserve under or defend and reserve under a reservation of rights.
But notice that both of those avenues are costly to a certain degree to the insurance company.
Sure.
And if the insurance company believes that there really clearly is no coverage, we all understand there's a little risk to the insurance company for taking that position as well, but that's just a different cost. So if the insurance company thinks the cost of that risk is lower than the cost of either just defending under a reservation of rights or filing separate litigation, then it's entitled to do exactly what Consolidated did.
It's entitled to, but there's a penalty that comes with that if they're wrong. If the complaint is
right,
such.
Right, and so you multiply, you know, the risk of error times what it's going to cost, and I think that's what they did.
I'm not standing up here arguing before this court that this policy, in fact, if it had been litigated appropriately in a declaratory judgment action, would have provided coverage to Lagasty Mulder. It probably would not have.
Well,
but
what
I am saying is that it absolutely had a duty to defend Lagasty Mulder, which is separate than the duty to indemnify, and that it violated, it breached its duty to defend. And in so breaching that duty to defend, came under the obligations that Illinois law requires of insurers that says that they now have a responsibility to take care of.
Is your client still in business?
He is.
Policies of this kind are often experience rated, so the insured will pay out of its own pocket over time. So why are you even pursuing this litigation? If what you do is shift costs to the insurer will shift them right back to you.
Well,
it won't be this year. It'll be over, say, a five-year period.
Well, wasn't this the policy the subcontractor bought?
Yes.
It was. It was a subcontractor policy, and this is an additional insured provision. There's a provision, an endorsement that allows them to become additional insureds.
I won't even point out that filing this lawsuit will make other insurers leery of dealing with you at all.
All of those may be true, Your Honor, but I have.
You've demonstrated that your client is trying to be opportunistic. You've just said on your feet that you're pretty confident this policy, in fact, doesn't cover this casualty, but you're trying to get money out of some third party anyway.
That's not
a reputation you want in business.
There's a bigger issue at stake here. Well, I'll grant you that I don't believe that the policy actually offers the indemnity for all of the coverage. It does offer.
But you're about to produce an opinion by the Seventh Circuit announcing to the whole world that your client is behaving opportunistically to try to get money out of somebody who you concede didn't owe you anything.
When you say anything, I'm talking about the indemnity aspect of the case, Your Honor. I don't agree with that, and it's not my position that they didn't owe the defense. The defense is not in itself a small matter until these things get worked out by other litigation to decide whether, in fact, there is coverage for it. The reality is this complaint could have worked its way out where there may have been damage to property other than the building itself, and, in fact, there would have been some indemnity available to this party. Now, as for the purposes and the broader perspectives, my charge is to come up here and to look at Illinois law and to see if Illinois law says that there is coverage or triggers a duty to defend with this complaint. And this complaint triggers the duty to defend because no rational reader of this complaint could know that it contains an uncovered an uncovered allegation. And without knowing it, the obligation in Illinois law is clear. And if there is a complaint to be raised about whether that's an appropriate, say, policy for law to have, that is certainly something that should be taken up and discussed. But for decades, this has been the rule of law in Illinois, that insurance companies understand that they're in an environment where, by if they want to protect that interest, they have available to them vehicles. And while, Your Honor, Judge Wood, I agree with you that that is an expense, but that is an expense that over the years has been worked out to be minimized. These types of declaratory judgments are fairly routine and typically ruled on the pleadings or on other documents that are attached. Their whole system is built in place to facilitate that sort of approach. With that said, I do believe that at the end of the day, if you look at this complaint cannot be read to preclude coverage, and therefore there was a duty on behalf of the defendant or of Consolidated to defend.
Counsel, why did the complaint specify so many defects?
Those were allegations of breach, Your Honor. I mean, I think that they did is they went through all of the contract. It is hard to actually get into the head of the pleader in this, but my sense of reading it is they went through the contract requirements. They listed those breaches. They looked at the defects they were experiencing, leaking, and they listed those as breaches. But those were just breaches.
So do you want us to suggest that the listing of all those defects is sort of like a possession arrow in basketball pointing toward the ultimate coverage that you would say it's sort of implied by listing all the defects?
Or? Well, not precisely, Your Honor. Maybe I don't understand the question, but...
Well, obviously, the coverage isn't all about defects, right? This you've got to have some damages.
True.
Yeah, but other than the word damages, don't you have to link the defects to the damage?
True.
So you're just saying we have to read that in.
Well, no. What I'm saying is that's what the pleader said. The pleader, in its complaint, says all of these defects were breaches of their duty, and they led to damages of more than $50,000. What you cannot possibly know, no one could know from reading the complaint, is whether the damages they're referring to are the defects to the building itself or to some other property. Now, I will say that the allegation about water infiltration is more like the arrow, and that it points to that there's something else going on.
Right.
And one could probably interpret that, but Illinois law doesn't require us to read into the complaint those things. It just simply asks the question, is it possible that this complaint is referring to a damage that is covered? And the answer is yes, it is. The damage that is, it potentially refers to a damage to some property other than the building itself. Because, frankly, the complaint doesn't tell you. So that sort of ambiguity or vagueness has to be construed in favor of the policyholder. Thank you, Your Honors. I'm going to take whatever remaining time I have for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. McCann.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael McCann here for Consolidated Insurance Company. If I may. Judge Feinerman got it exactly right. His analysis is spot on. He relied on relevant law. He interpreted the law correctly. I don't think that any reasonable person can look at this complaint and interpret it to mean anything other than there's a real problem with this building. It wasn't well built. It's a construction defect case. That's
so. I have an Illinois law question for you.
Sure.
Assuming the underlying litigation had gone forward in the state court, and at a later time somebody had tried to come in and say, not only was this a lousy building for all the reasons that are listed, But as a matter of fact, I had already moved all of my furniture into the building, and this water ruined substantial amounts of the furniture. Well, that would certainly be other property. Would that aspect of the case have been ruled out of order by the Illinois court as going beyond the scope of the pleading? In other words, in a fact-pleading case or jurisdiction, if you try to bring into the case something that wasn't properly in the pleadings, the court's going to say that's not encompassed in the case. So could somebody, had the state litigation gone forward, have listed my hypothetical damage to the furniture as an item of damages to recover?
In other words, if it wasn't specifically stated in the complaint, but then you get some discovery.
The same complaint that we have, but now the case is hypothetically moving forward, and somebody says, and here's our damages proof. It ruined all the furniture that we moved in.
As a practical matter, I think what would happen is the insurance company in the first instance would disclaim coverage or deny coverage for the complaint as pled.
I'm not asking about the insurance company right now. I'm just asking about in an Illinois case, Party A versus Party B, this was Crown versus Legeste Mulder.
Mm-hmm.
That case, we're just assuming hypothetically, was just being litigated. Nothing ever is, of course. It all gets settled, but we'll just indulge that assumption. And we'll assume Crown wants to come in and say, you know, we're litigating this complaint, and here's our evidence of damages. It ruined all the furniture that we moved into the building. Would the court have said, sorry, this isn't a case about damage to your other properties. This is just a case about construction defect.
I think ultimately the complaint would have to be amended to conform to the proof.
Okay. That's close to what I'm looking for. So now, the reason I'm interested in that is because if an Illinois court would have thought that this complaint was sufficient to allow damages proof of all kinds, whether it means along the lines that you would have in federal court, you could bring in whatever proof of damages that you have, then the furniture and, you know, somebody slipping on a puddle or anything else could all have come in.
I agree. I think at the end of the day, the court would ask that the complaint reflect what specific damages are being sought.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, I think if you look at this complaint, as Your Honor noted, it goes into great detail about all the problems with the building. It doesn't say one thing about whether there was property damage. And appellant would like this one phrase, property damage, to govern how we look at the entire complaint. We can't do that. We have to look at the complaint as a whole. And the other reality is, all they asked for was damages. By appellant's reasoning, why limit ourselves to other property damage? How come they can't be alleging that somebody suffered bodily injury?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, so when the purchaser of the building, if you will, Crown, sues the general contractor,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the complaint certainly looks like a construction defect suit. So one might even imagine if Crown had been trying to hold Legeste Mulder liable for damage to the furniture, the defendant might have said, you're trying to impose consequential damages on us that were not within the scope of our understanding this contract, and they would have cited Hadley against Baxendale or something and would have attempted to exclude that, I suspect.
But, I agree.
Yeah.
I think for our purposes here today, you know, it's simply a matter of Illinois law and cases interpreting coverage say repeatedly that what we look to are the facts pled in the complaint. And whereas appellant would like to turn that upside down and contend that in the absence of facts precluding coverage, then the insurance company owes a defense. But the reality is, under the cases, it says repeatedly, facts must be pled to trigger coverage. If there are no facts pled triggering coverage, then there's no duty to defend. It's an affirmative obligation. And moreover, again, looking at this complaint, you can see it's simply a construction defect case. Construction defect cases are not covered by policies of this nature. I can go on with any questions that you have. I don't know where to go with this other than to say that Judge Feinerman got it exactly right. You can see clearly from this, as we cited in our brief, they have, I don't remember, 26 different instances where they talk about how Legeste Mulder failed to construct the wall assembly, the exterior wall cladding, the backup wall. I could go on and on. Brick masonry. There's something in here about a truss system. from a pleading standpoint, I don't know that Crown would go on to say, and oh, by the way, the damages we seek are linked to this, just like you said. I mean, why would they put all that detail in there if there wasn't a clear inference that here are the problems and that's why we brought this complaint? That's what it's all about. Nowhere do they allege any fact alleging property damage, bodily injury, any other type of damage you can possibly imagine other than the building wasn't properly built, and so that's why we're suing you, and that's why we denied coverage. There are other issues that we raised in our briefs as to why we think we're entitled to summary judgment, even apart from the bases that Judge Feinerman brought up. We'll rest on our briefs as to those issues.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. McCann.
Thank you, Judge.
Anything further, Mr. Serenelli?
Just one comment, if I might. I just want to address that it seems to be the issue that's most interest is the sloppiness of the complaint. I think you're right. I think it probably would be subject to either motions or conforming to the proof at some point. But the real issue here is that the state of that complaint as it was handed to Consolidated for the tender, and at the point that Consolidated had that complaint in front of them, they really had no position and no ability to say that there was no coverage. And Illinois law does say that you must have something in there that precludes coverage for you that not defend. That's all I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.